For those of you who've been with us for all of the last 2 or 3 weeks, I apologize if you find that the fact that I really believe that to recap the things that, at least briefly, the things that we're talking about is really important. Because for those who haven't seen each step in the process, I want us to understand the foundation that I believe God is building for us as the teaching reflects the destination that God is taking us towards. And it reflects all of the things, fits into all of the things that God has given us to be part of what he's doing in our lives, not just this year, but in the years to come. And the whole concept of saturate takes us to a destination. For the earth will be filled with the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. Nice picture. How do we translate it? We translate it like this. Every man, woman, and child in every place, for most of us, that's Pacifica, will have a daily encounter. Don't miss any of the words here. Daily means every day, just in case you missed it. Daily encounter with Jesus. How? Through the words spoken and deeds done. Through who? His people. And who's that? You, absolutely, us. So that's what, if you want to put a picture on the glory of God covering the earth, that's it. That brings it right down to yours and my experience. How do we get there? Well, God gave us at the beginning of this year a focus for each of our lives, that we would learn to be with Jesus, be like Jesus, and do what Jesus did. We have that on a magnet for you today. As you leave, feel free to share them with anybody else you have. Those three watchwords, be with Jesus. It's so important to start there because it's the easiest step to skip. It's the easiest step to skip, the time that we spend alone in silence, perhaps with Jesus, reading his word, asking him to speak to us. It's the most neglected element of church life, of personal life. But I believe so strongly that if we want to build a foundation for what God wants to do among us, we must start there. Then we need to be like Jesus. We need to build relationships, not just here with one another and how we care for one another and how we support one another, but relationships out there with people who we can show and tell the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then next week, we're going to look particularly at the subject of being on mission. And then we've looked at the context in which these things happen. Because if you want to get practical, these are the places where we learn to do this. We learn to do this when we live life on life with one another. When we have people who we can be vulnerable with and who will be vulnerable with us, who will tell us the things that perhaps we wish they hadn't told us. And there will also, we will tell them, be able to tell them, and we will love them just the same. Our friends, our life-on-life people are those who know the worst about us and love us just the same. And then there's life in community, when we're in our small groups and the places where people really get to know us and really get to share together what doing these things, both here and out there in our workplaces, are all about. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. in our work, and then life on mission. We'll see that next week, really very specifically, where God actually sends us out. But for today, we've learned some very specific tools that God has given us in order to do the things he's called us to do. He's given us very specific contexts that we need to seek out and find, and some very specific tools that he's given us to use. And one of those biggest tools is our stories. Nobody can deny your story. Nobody can deny your story. We've heard from Sharon, we've heard from Ebony. And today, we're going to hear from Julie. So Julie, come and tell us your story.
I asked my mom, well, that was really loud. A few years ago, I asked my mom, did you ever think I would be working in church ministry? This was my mom's reply. God worked a lot of miracles for you to become part of our family. So even when you were far from God, I knew that God was not going to ever let you go. I knew he had a purpose for you, and it was just a matter of time that God would fulfill, you would fulfill God's calling in your life. So my parents always called me their miracle baby because they went on a very long journey to adopt me from the Philippines. They had a lot of obstacles, and they also didn't think it was going to happen at some points. But thanks to God's provisions and my parents' faithfulness, the trajectory of my life has been changed forever. However, my junior year in high school, I went through a huge period of doubting. I didn't want anything to do with God, Christianity, religion, church, none of it. And I also started questioning about why I was adopted, because at that point, I didn't know. I didn't know my story. My dad had a lot of struggles with this, and we got into a lot of fights about, you need to go to church, you need to believe in Jesus, and I was like really overwhelmed by it. Thankfully, my mom was more open to it and allowed me to have questions. But the person who actually really mentored me through this time was a youth leader. And she really guided me and supported me and allowed me to ask all the questions that I needed to. So the biggest turning point in this year was actually I reluctantly went to a Christian youth conference with my youth group in Washington, D.C. And this woman named Pam Stenzel spoke at the conference about her adoption story. And at that point, I had never heard anyone speak about their adoption story. And she spoke as that it was a blessing and not a loss. And it really changed my perspective. And then I went home and told my mom about that, and she was like, oh, I realize I haven't told you your story. So it prompted her to tell me my story, which I actually want to share with you guys today, because then it will explain why my parents call me their miracle baby. So my birth mother was schizophrenic, and she was in a mental hospital. And at some point, her parents couldn't pay the bills anymore, and they actually saw her as a stigma on their family. So when she was released, she was put out onto the streets. And during that time, she was impregnated with me. And a nurse from the hospital actually saw her around 8 months pregnant and decided to bring her back to the mental hospital, which she wasn't legally supposed to do. And they allowed her to have me at the hospital. Eventually, they actually had to release her because she couldn't stay there. But they knew that she couldn't take care of me on the streets and with her condition. So I actually stayed in the mental hospital. I was never in an orphanage. The nurses took really good care of me. And they contacted this woman named Louise Lineup, who was an American woman living in the Philippines as a liaison between the Philippines and the United States. And my parents had actually met her 7 years before I was even born. So she contacted my parents, said, there's a little girl who needs to be adopted from the Philippines. Are you interested in starting the process to adopt her? They said yes, really elated. And then during that time, a volcano in the town where I was born erupted, called Mount Mayon, and we were all evacuated. And Louise Lineup lost complete contact with us. So I technically was lost, because she didn't know where we went, and had to tell my parents. And my parents were like, well, what do we do? And she said, you can either wait for Julie to be found, or you can go with another girl. So it was about 6 months of them trying to decide on what to do. And then right when they were about to decide, my parents decided, or my Louise lineup found us at the mental hospital again. So my mom and dad were contacted and were like, oh, we found Julie. Do you want to go with her? And they said yes. So they were excited, and they were about to close on the adoption. But then there was another obstacle. The president of the United, the president of the Philippines at the time was not allowing any children out for international adoption, because there was a rule or a law that was going into place that if you were to be adopted, it was domestic only. So Louise lineup was very upset about this, because she was in contact with many children that needed to be adopted. And she actually went to the president's office and fought him on this. They decided that 10 babies could be released from the Philippines. So in 1985, the last 10 babies that were up for international adoption were released, and I was one of those 10 babies. Mm. So my mom actually concluded with, and this is why we call you our miracle baby, because there were many obstacles, and we didn't even know if it was going to happen, but God's hand was truly in the beginning of your life. So after I heard Pam's story and my own story, I clearly changed my perspective on God, and I really was like, wow, okay, I guess I was supposed to be part of the Bauer family, because that was one of my questions, like, why did my mom give me up? But like any human being, I kind of still oscillated and wandered away from God for many years, and I honestly just wanted to do what I wanted to do. I was 16 years old. I was a child. And even throughout many years, I just decided to do what I wanted to do. But it wasn't until 2015 I really did a 180 in my faith. And it was when my mom gave me a call that my dad was very sick, and they weren't sure if he was going to make it through the night. And we were living in California, and they said, if you can get here as fast as possible, please do, because we're not sure what's going to happen. So Jacob found a flight out the next morning. We had a fussy 8-month-old baby on the plane, and I arrived at my dad's hospital room in Boston. That's where they live. Sorry, I forgot that detail. So he was on life support and unconscious, and I just spent most of the night there. Eventually, I had to go back to the hotel room to get some rest because it was very long travel. And I had a very vivid dream that night that Jesus and my dad were standing next to each other, which seemed to me like heaven in the dream. And Jesus looked straight at me and said, your dad's safe with me. And I completely woke up and I said, Jacob, I had this dream. I need to go talk to my dad right now, because what if he's passed? And so I went to the hospital at 5:30 in the morning. I rushed over there, and he was still breathing. He was still on life support and unconscious. And I just sat down next to him and I said, Dad, I had this dream. If it's true, just give me a sign. And so I sat there holding his hand for about a minute, and then all of a sudden, he opened his eyes, smiled at me, and squeezed my hand. And I was blown away. I was like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And so with the dream, plus my dad giving me a sign, God was completely revealed to me and so, like, real. And I was like, oh my goodness, okay. So my dad passed a week later. We came back from the funeral. We came back to, and we searched for churches. And we landed here at New Life. And I've really tried to be pretty steadfast in my faith since then. Of course, I still have questions, and just because I'm a human being. But what I really learned was exactly what my mom said, that God was never going to let me go. God always has brought me back when I wandered away. God does exactly what was written in the hymnal, it's called My Shepherd Will Supply My Need, which is based off Psalm 23. And it says, he brings my wandering spirit back when I forsake his ways, and leads me for his mercy's sake in paths of truth and grace.
I want you guys to know something. I have no idea. I just ask certain people to share their stories. I really don't know what their stories are. I really don't. But who could be better to share their story when we're asking God to show us what it means to have a new identity than Julianne? Than that story that we heard about how God gave her the most precious new identity that is now driving her life as she and Jacob live here with their precious children. God gave her a precious new identity. And last week we saw that identity was a member, as we were baptized into the name of the Father, we were baptized as children of God. This week we look at what it means to be baptized into the life of the Son, of the King of Kings. Let's remember what God said. Because as we've seen, Jesus' saturation cannot happen through us till it's happened to us. We heard how Jesus decided to saturate Julie's life and surprise her in the process. But what? Well, let's remember that at the beginning of Genesis, God said, let us make human beings like us, and they will reign over the fish in the sea. So God, when God gave us baptized, when God created us, he created us into a family, but he created us to reign. He created us to rule with him. I don't quite know what's happened to my slides, but they're completely in the wrong order today. So anyway, we'll go without them. He created us to reign. He created us as a ruler. So God was a ruler. He created us. And what he did, he created us as his vice regents to submit to his rule. That's who we are. And to rule on his behalf, that's what he would do. So as he created it into his family, he also created us to rule with him. And Jesus came as a king. These are not in the order it's probably entirely my fault. What happened when Jesus, in Matthew chapter 2 and verse 2, it says that Jesus came as a king. He came as a king. That's why Herod was so frightened about the fact that he'd arrived, was he came as a king. And so Herod didn't like the fact that he was a king, but Jesus didn't like the fact that he was a king either. Or he didn't like the fact that people wanted him to be a king. And so in John chapter 6 and verse 15, he says, when they decided they were going to make him a king, he slipped away and hid somewhere else and went somewhere else so that they would not make him a king. But what Jesus came to proclaim to us was not that he wasn't a king, but that his idea of kingship was completely different. Because we still pray, thy kingdom come. So what does all this kingdom look like? How does he mean? How does he mean if we are to reign with him? What was his purpose? What was he calling us to do when he created us an identity of reigning with him? Well, Jesus tries to explain it to his people. In Matthew chapter 20, we get this incident when Jesus gathers his disciples together. He gathers his disciples in Jerusalem, and he says, Matthew chapter 20. Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, and he took the 12 disciples aside privately and told them what was going to happen. And just after that, the James and John, their mother, came up to Jesus and they said, and she says this, she says, when you get into your kingdom, this is John chapter 20, verse 21, so in your kingdom, please let my two sons sit either side of you. So she knew, she recognized that he was a king, and she thought, well, when it comes to the kingdom, please let my sons sit either side of you. Jesus corrects her, of course, and says, you don't know what you're asking. And of course, the other disciples think, hey, what do you think you are? You're asking to sit either side of the King of Kings. But then Jesus teaches them. He teaches them something which is so important. He says, whoever wants to sit, Jesus called them together. And he says, you know, the rulers of this world lord it over their people. This is the sort of kingship that you think that you're thinking about, but you're not thinking straight. Because my kingdom is an upside down kingdom. My kingdom is completely different than what you say. But for you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader amongst you must be your servant. I suspect that they had no idea what he was talking about. They listened, they heard the words, but how could this be? How can a kingdom be populated where the king serves the people? And the people don't really just get bossed around by the king. And in case they missed it, he went on to say, for the Son of Man came. Not to serve, not to be served, but to serve others. Okay, so maybe we've got this wrong. That we are to be servants. That as he calls us to reign with him, he calls us to reign as servants. And he goes on, he uses the words on occasions of being a slave. A most unpolitically correct word. And yet that's what he says he is. And that's what he calls us to be. It's interesting that just a little bit further down in that chapter, just after Jesus teaches them that, he's walking along with the disciples and two blind men come and say, hey, Son of Man, Son of David, have mercy on us. And Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? How would you like me to serve you? Two blind men, you're going to say, okay, you're blind, whatever. How can I serve you? You see, as the disciples spent time with Jesus and they saw what Jesus did, they saw what it means to be somebody who had all the authority in heaven but served everyone who he encountered, moment by moment, day by day. I love the way... Then, the next little scene that I want to share with you that hopefully will help us begin to see how Jesus demonstrated to those who lived with him what it was like to be a servant. Just before he came to the, just before he was approaching Jerusalem, he was going to have the Passover with his most cherished friends. And you know, Passover for Jewish people is really an exciting celebration. They get excited about it. They prepare for it. All of the things that go on at the Passover celebration is really exciting for them. Having worked for Jews for Jesus for the time that I did, Passover time was really amazing. We used to go out and share the story of the Passover all over the country. And every time you went to the Jewish people really get excited about Passover. Whether or not they are Orthodox or whether or not they follow their faith consistently, they get excited about Passover. So you can imagine that the disciples were getting excited and Jesus was excited to share Passover with his closest friends. And you can imagine the scene when they all rushed into the room to get ready to have this exciting meal. And then suddenly, Jesus gets up, takes off his robe, and puts a towel around his waist. And you know the feeling it is when you suddenly realize, oh my gosh, I forgot. How did I forget that? I can just imagine that those disciples were sitting, they thought, how can we get out? How can we put this right? As Jesus puts and begins to wash the disciples' feet, how could we possibly have rushed into the room with all this excitement, so looking forward to sharing the Passover, and we forgot the foot washing that is so much part of the tradition of coming into somebody's house. And Jesus, the one who they have followed and loved and care, he washes their feet. Well, we all know what Peter said. Okay, you're not going to wash my feet. And then, of course, Jesus says, well, you know, if I don't wash your feet, then you're not part of what's going on here. Oh, wash all of me then. You know, typical Peter. Oh, wash all of me. Yeah, give me a full bath. He says, no, you don't need that. Just let me wash your feet because I'm showing you something. I'm showing you. And so he says, do you understand what I'm doing? Do you understand that I'm trying to show you something? I'm trying to show you something. You call me teacher and Lord, and that's right. But you see, I want you to understand what it means that I came to be a servant. And I am trying to show you that this is what I am calling you to be, a servant. You ought to wash each other's feet. Really? The kingdom is becoming more and more paradoxical. It's becoming more and more upside down. You ought to wash each other's feet just like I have. And then he goes on and he says, I've given you an example to follow. I came here to give you an example to follow. I tell you the truth, slaves are not greater than their master, nor is the messenger more important than the one who sends the message. I tell you the truth that slaves, nor is a now you know these things, and God will bless you because you know them. Oh no, that's not quite right. God will bless you for doing them. He's told us that if we want to know what being servants for one another is, then washing each other's feet is a really good picture. Finally, I want to take you to, as Jesus continues to unpack this to his beloved disciples, I want to take you to the Mount of Olives just before Jesus is crucified and he tries to explain. We have the parable there's a whole series of parables in Matthew 25. where he explains all sorts of different aspects of the time when Jesus will come again. He wants them to know the direction. He wants them to know the destination when the earth will be filled with the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. He wants them to be excited about that, but he doesn't want them to misunderstand what is going to happen. So there's a whole series of parables, which you can read at your leisure in Matthew chapter 25. But here comes the last one when he talks about the sheep and the goats. And he says at the end, there will be sheep and there will be goats. And he begins to unpack for us what it means to be a sheep and what it means to be a goat. And so he says, and look at the beginning of what it says, the king will say to those on his right, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. What qualifies you? What qualifies you to do that? Well, here's what he says. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. Now, there's all sorts of people who have given all sorts of interpretations of some of the things that are said here. But I love the fact that Grant Osborne in his commentary says this: whatever interpretation you want to give, what we see here is a demonstration of compassion and mercy to hurting people. That time and time again, each one of these illustrations, they saw something which was not right, something that needed to happen, and they then put it right. You were hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I saw there was something that needed to be done, and instead of trying to find somebody else to do it, they did it. They were servants in these difficult situations. And here's the interesting thing. They didn't know it. When did we ever see you? When did we ever see you? Why was that? That was because their service was an immediate and automatic reaction to what they experienced. They have experienced in the life of God. The fact that Jesus died to save them from their sins has meant a response of love, which meant they reached out to all of those around them. And it was so automatic, they weren't conscious of doing it. And so he says to them, you know, when you did it to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, when you did it to the least of them, that's when you did it to me. That's when you showed you were my servant. That's when you realized that you were doing what I did. That you learned from being with me what sort of a person I was. That you saw the way I treated people and you wanted to be like me. And then you did what I did by feeding the hungry, by giving drink to the thirsty. And you invited me into your home when I was a stranger. You know, one of the most rampant diseases of our culture is loneliness. We have a population of however many people here in Pacifica, 30,000 or 40,000, and there is as much loneliness here as there is anywhere. And who wants to admit that they're lonely? Are we looking for people who are lonely to invite them into our homes? Are we looking for hurting people to show compassion and mercy? Jesus gave us a new identity. He gave us a new identity as a child of God. He gave us a new identity as a servant of the King. As we enjoy the benefits of being a child of God, are we ready to share the benefits by serving the King in every way we can? By serving the King. See, Jeff Vanderstelt actually describes the act of servant as seeing something that is not as it ought to be and doing something about it. Seeing something that is not as it ought to be and doing something about it. Now, we've seen this happen in amazingly different contexts. But it happens to your next door neighbor. It happens in the cubicle next to you at work. It happened in our school district. And the school board with Andy on it saw something which was not right. Where there were no housing for teachers, so we couldn't have teachers who could afford to live here. So they did something about it. And in 2 years' time, teachers will have somewhere to live. We hope that we're going to be able to do something about those people who have been squeezed out of their housing and as yet have not found a way to get back and are living in their vehicles. If we can have just two spaces, we can make a difference. We can see something which is not as it ought to be and do something about it. If you have the Saturated book, you'll find that you can read story after story after story about people who did big things and little things. People who noticed, a small group who noticed that the children, that the families around them were many single parent families around them, and the children didn't have birthday parties. So they decided that every child that had a birthday, they were going to give them a birthday party. Other people who reached out in different ways, but who asked God to show them the things that were not as they ought to be and how they could make them as they ought to be. Even on many occasions, that's just by committing ourselves to pray consistently, regularly, for things that need to change. We are in an impossibly divided country right now. We are about to enter a political season. Let me ask you this. I do not care what your political position is. But are we going to be those who will pray that God will bring the right people to the right places, and is the way we behave in that political context going to reflect the King of Kings? Or are we going to behave the same way as everybody else does? Are we going to see that the way our political process takes place is not as it ought to be because of the way people behave? And we are going to behave differently. We are going to behave differently so that we can reflect the character of Christ in these terribly difficult times. Jesus calls us to be his servant. His servant to one another and his servant to the world in which we live. As I close, I want to read to you a poem that was written. It was a song called The Servant Song. Will you let me be your servant? Will you let me be Christ to you? Pray that I might have the grace to let you be my servant too. We are pilgrims on the journey. We are travelers on the road. We are here to help each other walk the mile and bear the load. I will hold the Christ light for you in the night time of your fear. I will hold my hand out to you, speak the peace you long to hear. I will weep when you are weeping. When you laugh, I'll laugh with you. I will share your sorrow, joy, and share your sorrow till we've seen this journey through. Will you let me be your servant? Let me be as Christ to you. Pray that I might have the grace to let you be my servant too. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you gave us an identity of being a child of God. You gave us the identity of reigning with the King of Kings, who reigns as a servant, who gave his life as a ransom for many. Father, show us how we can be your servant. We ask it in your name.